Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, is it finally over? Are we finally done, Chris, with the Adam Copeland Edge Christian Cage feud? Was it settled in Toronto tonight? Can we move on?
I sure hope so. I really do hope so. As someone who was actually really looking forward to this feud, as a big Edge and Christian fan, back when they were a tag team, not thinking that their split up was really resolved, I was looking forward to them feuding, and now I'm looking forward to it hopefully being over.
And it's not just a dig at Copeland and Christian feuding, although that's part of it, but it's also, I just want to see them do different things. I want to see Christian move on. I want to see Copeland do something different than this, that's completely separate from this. And, you know, I've kind of had my fill of this feud. And, you know, we went from Copeland saying, I never want to fight him. And then now they fought. And it was, you know, it was kind of what I expected the I Quit match to be. But now, and we'll talk about that, but I really am ready now for Copeland to move on and face some new challengers. There's, like, I don't want to say dream matches, but, like, compelling, intriguing first-time matches with some wrestlers who I think kind of deserve a chance to have a TV spotlight or pay-per-view spotlight match with somebody they grew up watching, somebody of Copeland's stature. And I think it'll freshen up Copeland, too. Christian's great. He'll be fine with whatever he does next, and I look forward to it. But I actually hope the TNT title on Copeland doesn't lead to Christian demanding a rematch and stretching this out more. Let's leave the comfort zone, leave that familiarity, and move on to some other matches with other baby faces. With Copeland facing some heels. And, you know, I think there's a good mix who would be elevated by a feud like that.
Yeah, I think that they my one concern is that, I know they did this before, is that Killswitch is the one that gets the shot at Copeland so he can win the belt and give it back to Christian Cage. But I think they need to be separated for a while. Christian can find another wrestler, babyface wrestler, whose dad is no longer with us.
Right.
And
exactly.
Copeland can wrestle some heels. It's kind of the problem with AEW generally, that they don't book people into positions where you say, okay, this one feud is over there. Three or four people I would like the champion or the whoever won to wrestle. So they'd have to have someone kind of a middle heel that would be a good challenge for Copeland. Someone like kind of how Danny Garcia was before he was babyface, but someone like him who's had a couple wins and now looks ready to step up and get a title shot.
Are there any wrestlers, face or heel, but primarily heel, who you'd like to see take on Copeland for the TNT title in addition to or instead of or before or after further feuding with Christian and Killswitch and Nick Wayne?
I mean, the two that come to mind, maybe because one of them is on my TV right now, is someone like Powerhouse Hobbs.
Yeah.
Takeshita is another person who, you know, they're both heels and they're both kind of in the middle. Trying to think who else. So, I mean, he was someone who I really enjoyed in the Continental Classic, but he hasn't had singles matches since then, Brody King. Mm-hmm. If they had kept the momentum that he had at that time and he had a couple of singles matches, he would be a good opponent for Copeland, a big heel. So there are a few people who I think could have good matches, but the problem is they're not really set up in that position to be a ready-made feud.
And there's so many titles, you know, I mean, like Copeland's holding up this title and it's like, which one is it? And how prestigious is it? And did every other title get a moment on the show? And it's like, yeah, you've got wrestlers out there. There's so many. When we try to come up with a list of people who would be worthy of having a feud with Copeland, part of the issue is a lot of the candidates are just tied up wrestling others. You know, even Will Ospreay or Okada, they're going to be wrapped up in feuding over two other titles. And, I mean, I guess the Roderick Strong one is just – it got mentioned, but it wasn't a big part of the show. So, yeah, I just – I don't know. I mean, this would have felt like a bigger moment if Copeland was holding up a belt at the end that wasn't one of at least four major men's singles titles. I don't quite know what the status is of the crown part of the Continental title, if that's just – have they made clear – have you seen anything about what they're going to do with that? I didn't hear an explanation tonight about, you know, the Continental title and the Continental crown and if they both exist separate from each other or not.
My impression or my understanding and just sort of my perception was because Eddie Kingston is wrestling Mark Briscoe at the Supercard of Honor in a couple weeks at WrestleMania weekend, that he was going to simultaneously lose these titles and they would be no longer together. So he lost the Continental Classic. He would lose the Ring of Honor title to Mark Briscoe, and then he'd probably lose the New Japan Strong title at one of the next – New Japan has two shows coming up this spring, and I thought he'd probably lose that. And they, you know, after the months of putting them together, they'd be separated again.
And how do you feel about that?
I think that's a terrible idea. When I did Collision post-shows with my Wrestling Coast to Coast colleague and very good friend, Justin McCollum, I talked about how the Continental Classic was a really good opportunity for AEW to have a booking focus and have singles matches where people had a great reason to wrestle and a really good presentation. But then the very first match after Eddie Kingston won, he ended up defending it against Trent Beretta, who won a four-way against, you know, three other wrestlers who were nowhere near of being even considered being in the tournament. So they already devalued it by who was wrestling for it. And then my thought was, and I'm not the only person who thought this way, that New Japan or Okada didn't want Okada to hold the New Japan Strong title.
Exactly.
For probably political reasons. And therefore, if he was going to win this title, they had to be separated. But then the problem with AEW that I've always had is that they make a big deal about something, and then in a few weeks it becomes moot. And that really is an issue for fans to get invested in things if they know that at the end of the day, it's really not going to matter.
Totally agree. I mean, it's not a big thing, but it's not a small thing either, bringing the rankings back and then just pretending that didn't happen. Do we have another Continental Classic tournament next year? They've said they are doing it. What will be the prize? Are they going to bring three other titles together, or is it just going to be to earn a shot at the Continental title? Will that be enough of a prize? Should it just be separated from that? Have they figured this out? If they have, will people buy into what their explanation is after what feels like a little bit of a fiasco here?
And also, why would I go through a grueling tournament having to get more points than five other wrestlers and then beat someone else in a separate block when I can just wrestle one singles match to win the title?
Exactly. So
the incentive.
I mean, I don't want to say they don't think these things through, but there's not evidence that they take it seriously, how I think fans do feel about this. It does seem to happen in here. As far as the match itself goes, I don't know. When somebody is taking a spiked board to the crotch and they're not quitting after taking repeated shots to the crotch while handcuffed in the corner – and not quitting. I mean, you've just sort of crossed, for me, into a line of just sort of an eye roll where I'm just kind of rolling my eyes at, like, it's just kind of ridiculous. But it's exactly, it's very, very, very close to what I expected to happen here. A match that included tables and ladders and chairs and kind of played off that nostalgia and their history. I think some people, quite a few people would be satisfied with it. You know, it's in Toronto, the crowd is going nuts. The crowd was enthusiastic about the match, and it got a little too much over the top by the end, I think. But I don't know how you can do this style match and not, you know, end up likely in that territory, especially the way these two are going to feud at this stage of the feud and what Copeland's approach is going to be. So tell me about your thoughts on the match as it progressed and what you thought of the closing minutes.
I didn't time it out, but when I saw Copeland walk out, and I think on my watch, I'm on the Eastern time zone, it said 9:36. I said, this match is going to go 25 minutes. I think it went half an hour almost. Yeah. I think the problem with this match is Christian's character, you know that there's going to be interference. So the first part of the match, you're just waiting for someone to come out. You mentally know that nothing they do in the first half is going to actually lead to a result. I was glad Edge had people come out and help him because, you know, the babyface finally figured out that he's going to need someone to help him if his opponent yeah. has people running. I thought actually the finish was going to be Christian is so vain that when they did the first spike, right before he would quit. But they hit him with it and he still said that he wouldn't quit. And it's sort of like, well, it's supposed to be this very dangerous weapon that's scary. And I think they just, you know, sometimes AEW can be self-indulgent with these things. And this is an example of if Copeland had just brought it out and Christian knew how devastating that bat was, that he just would have accepted, you know, I need to quit because I don't want to get hit with that. But him getting hit with it once kind of really downplays its significance. But I mean, I enjoyed the match, but I think a lot of the matches on the show in my mind were just a little bit too long, and they just needed to be a little bit shorter to get the point across a little bit better.
Very good. All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves here and then get on to phone calls, emails, and other topics on tonight's show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And the host of this, the Wade Keller Post Show, following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and some collisions, and also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Our Tuesday flagship edition dropped yesterday on a Tuesday. Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, my guest, and we spent the first half of the show on AEW topics and the second hour of the show on WWE topics. Hope you will check that out if you haven't yet. You can download the show. Just search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to the Red Logo Show, this one, and the Blue Logo Show, which is our main podcast. You can also become a VIP member and hear more of my podcasts and more podcasts from our team at PWTorch, pwtorch.com/goVIP. Speaking of which, one of our podcast hosts is with me tonight on Dynamite as co-host, Chris Maitland. Chris, welcome. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the co-host chair on a Wednesday.
Yes, not usual for me. Usually on Wednesdays, I tape my daily cast with my very good friend, Justin McCollins, Wrestling Coast to Coast, a show that discusses independent wrestling, and we do a different show each week. Our show we recorded on Tuesday, so gave me an opportunity to co-host with you today. Our show, which I'll be sending to you momentarily, includes us talking about Wrestling Open and our live experience at the Ohio Wrestling Alliance show here in Columbus, Ohio, where I live. And I actually will be attending WrestleMania weekend, not to go to WrestleMania, because I went to the one in Dallas in 2016, and I'm not doing that again because it was 7 hours. I will be attending a few independent shows while I'm there, and we'll talk about that. But, our show usually comes out on Wednesdays or Thursdays on the Daily Cast lineup, and we talk about a different show every week. And I'm happy to be here with you co-hosting the Dynamite post show.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out. Let's go ahead and shift to other topics on the show, as I said, and pivot to calls and emails. If you want to call us, even if you're just watching Rampage in the background, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That'll flag you on our switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. I did it again. Old habits die hard. Again, that's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We are hoping to perhaps hear from an on-site correspondent, although we'll see if it works out with given the fact that Rampage is still going on. It might logistically not work out, but we have somebody who might be able to join us, so maybe stay tuned for that. All right. Let's go to our first call, though. We got Greg from Waterloo, Iowa, who's giving us a call. Greg, welcome to the show. Go ahead and state your name and – or state your name. Go ahead and tell us what's on your mind about Dynamite tonight. I'm trying to watch Rampage and do a podcast. It's not easy. I'm flubbing up left and right because I'm trying to multitask and try to keep half an eye on things. So I apologize to everybody for my flubs here. I could blame, you know, something else. But
doing well.
I'm
doing well. And to be fair, that tag match was a pretty good one to not pay attention to. I mean, those guys were working really hard, and that was turned into a very good tag team match there. But by the way, since it was mentioned last week, I am calling from the Waterloo Wrestling Hall of Fame, of which you are a member of. So, wanted to throw that
calling
in there.
From there right now.
I am actually in Waterloo right now. Yes.
But, well, I thought you were at the Hall of Fame. I was like, well, that's interesting. I didn't know they were open at this time.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the home of the Hall of Fame, but not the actual Hall of Fame. Anyway, yes.
No, I'm not calling from the Hall of Fame right now.
Yes. Gotcha.
Anyway, one of the things you follow up on, you mentioned the abundance of titles in this company, and you have both Okada and Adam Copeland winning titles that are not the main world title, and these are I thought that was an interesting note that both of these titles changed hands on the same night. And I think that the ROH title being separated away is probably a good thing, because then that puts the focus on Eddie Kingston and Mark Briscoe, which I'm sure will be a big deal to the Philadelphia crowd with a lot, you know. Mark Briscoe going for the ROH title. So that's a good thing, but it's also like, man, there's all these titles around, and now there's the potential of the person who I want to talk about here in a moment, Mercedes Moné, being thrown into the second AEW women's title feud, although I'm not sure if that's where they're going. She's currently working with the people involved in the TBS title program. So there's definitely an abundance of titles in this company, and so...
It's quite a bit to take or to keep track of. And I mean, and it's not just that it's hard to keep track of. It's just the more titles you have, the more it gets watered down. But yeah, I mean, we haven't brought up Mercedes yet. Chris, any thoughts on what they did with her tonight in terms of forwarding the storylines that were kind of introduced or followed up on, I guess, introduced to the Dynamite audience, but followed up on for those following Mercedes' career over the last year or so. What'd you think of what we saw from her tonight? And you can really add to what you thought of it last week, since you weren't on the show last week.
I thought it was very odd that she came out and said, here's a video of who I am, when last week she was this big surprise. Not a complete surprise, but she was this big signing that people know who she is. That didn't quite make sense to me, her standpoint. I wish she was more clear on, I mean, this week she was more clear on having an actual opponent. Just she talked about Willow and her being injured by Willow in the New Japan Strong, and her really having an issue with Sky Blue and Julia Hart because they have an issue with Willow, but it's still not, it's not concrete enough as like a straight feud. Either someone challenges her. It's a little bit too just indirect. And my mind, for me, I'm a big fan of Willow since her Ring of Honor days. And it looks like they're going to try to turn her heel to wrestle Mercedes Moné, which to me is like a huge, huge mistake. And I think really it would have been better to give Mercedes a challenger initially, a heel that she could wrestle with. I thought Serena D was going to be that person so she could focus on immediately, not in the title contest or someone to get wins, but I think they need to kind of put her in a situation where she has a focus, as opposed to, one, her not having a focus, and also altering kind of how we feel about wrestlers who've been in AEW for a while.
Greg brought up the situation with Eddie and Okada. Talk about that, Chris, too, which we haven't gotten into.
The match I thought was fine. I'm interested. I'm not someone who always studies the ratings, but that match did go pretty long as well. I wonder how people are interested in it. The thing with me that's interesting with Okada is AEW frequently relies far too much on someone else's past in the presentation and just presenting someone's like, oh, you know who they are. Don't worry about it. You already have an idea of them. But the way they're presenting mm-hmm. Okada is different because Okada was a heel about 10 years ago, but in New Japan, he's been a babyface for quite a long time. I assume most of the audience who's familiar with him are not familiar with his heel days of 2012. So they're kind of reinventing him. I enjoy his heel persona. I wish he wasn't with the Young Bucks. I don't think they help him. I think they're more using his star power to benefit themselves. And I also found it hilarious that after his match, Pac came out to challenge him, which is something out of New Japan. Though I also didn't understand why Eddie Kingston, in one of the best interviews that AEW has, they aired a video with Okada and the Young Bucks, and Renee Paquette cut a promo for Eddie Kingston. It just didn't fit his character. Eddie Kingston's not someone who's afraid to say what he feels, and I don't know why they didn't air a minute interview of him talking about why he wants to win this match. Maybe because he was not going to, but it just didn't make sense to me. He didn't fit his character.
Yeah. So a few things there. With Okada and Kingston, I do worry, or I don't worry, it's not the right word. I wonder for people who have heard a lot about Okada, if that's the type of match where people go, now I get it. I think there's this assumption that people are just kind of picking up in the flow of Okada and they know who he is and he's a big deal. But so far, like, if he wasn't a big deal with his track record and he just sort of, you're just a Dynamite viewer, you got introduced, but like you didn't even hear a lot of buzz about him, you wouldn't think he was anything, you know, all that special, because AEW has a really talented roster. He seems talented, but I'm not sure he's coming across in a way right now, early on. I don't think the average non-New Japan, non-hardcore fan, and maybe there just aren't that many that AEW wants. Jason Paul and I talked about that yesterday on the flagship. I just don't know how many people watching him are going to be like, oh, God, now I really have to watch every week because there's this guy. I just don't think he's flashy in that way. So then it has to be based on the match that he has, and this was sort of a stand there and chop me. Okay, now I'm going to chop you or elbow you back type match that went on quite a while. But it wasn't really flashy. You know, like, oh, that was a nice basement dropkick from Okada, and then there was a Rainmaker, which has a ton of history, but it's like, it's not that like jaw-dropping or anything like that, and I think AEW fans are used to that, especially in comparison with like Will Ospreay at this point. So Chris, I want to ask you first, but then I want to Greg's thought on that topic too. What do you think about that aspect of Okada's presentation at this point? Are they missing a chance to bring new people in, or is that just not Okada? So, you know, what can you do? I mean, Okada's going to have to be character work and big matches, and it will be more of a slow build, a slow burn for people to kind of get it.
Yeah, I think it is very difficult to bring the New Japan style to American television because the New Japan style is a lot of tag matches on the undercard, you know, through a lot of months of the year, or times where a main event New Japan wrestler isn't wrestling during the Best of Super Juniors or the Real World Tag League. And so I think a lot of people focus on these Okada main event matches, which have been tremendous over the time that I've seen him. But I think the issue with Okada, and maybe giving him this title, even we don't know where it ranks in the pecking order, may help him, is that Okada in New Japan it reminds me of the way I used to see Ric Flair in the 80s. Ric Flair was either the champion or he was fighting for the championship. He was always put in that place. He's not someone in the middle of the card. And I don't know if AEW can present him that way because they're so focused on flashy moves. He is not the flashiest wrestler. He's a very talented wrestler, but the way that he got over, the same way to Jay White in a lot of ways, is these very long matches that were grueling, that he would outlast people, but they can't do that every week on American TV. I think that their goal is to establish him as a character, as this heel, but I don't think they're putting him in the best position to do that. I think there may have been better ways to do that. So I think he'll keep getting a good reaction for his moves, but I think that he needs, and maybe Pac or someone else, babyface, that he needs to really sink his teeth into. But he has to have that main event presentation. That was really what made Okada Okada.
Greg, I want to throw to you for your thoughts on that in light of what they did, especially tonight with Okada and Kingston.
I think I'm with you on that because for me, I don't regularly follow New Japan, so I haven't seen a ton of Okada outside of some of his best matches, which were much more about I'm not super familiar with a lot of his character work, and I can say for me personally that as someone who is not like super familiar with him already as it is, or I know there's an aura for me, like I can't say really there's too much that gives me a reason to really be invested. I don't know if it's the whole Young Bucks thing or not, but I would also contrast that to Will Ospreay, who the presentation of I was critical of right at, for a bit, but like now, like I think it's kind of the opposite with him, where he's getting to go out and cut passionate promos and really show off his personality in addition to being this this incredible wrestler. So I feel like there's a happy medium between like Okada and Ospreay. I think that might be a good thing.
And when you say happy medium, do you think Ospreay needs to? You think he needs to change at all, or
I think Ospreay is coming off like as this very much. I think the personality is coming off in a very strong way with where like if. I don't know if there could be some type of hybrid, Wade. If there's some type of hybrid, I guess, between like this combination of in-ring work and personality that you could like a perfect combination of both of them at their strongest, which I don't know if that's been achieved.
Chris, what do you think of Ospreay at this point? Say that last part again, Greg. Sorry, I was talking over you.
I think with Will Ospreay, it's more so been achieved, like the more of a merging of the personality, the character, and the wrestler, because he's really gotten, I think, show out the last couple weeks.
And that's what I was trying to clarify, is if you were thinking Ospreay's too much in one direction and Okada's too much in the other, and both would benefit from merging or kind of meeting in the middle, or if you're like, Ospreay's fine.
I guess that was a little bit of word salad there, but I just think maybe some of it's a long-winded word style way of me saying that, like, I think they've started to achieve with Ospreay, it would be good or beneficial to maybe start to achieve that a little more with Okada in terms of the personality side of things and character work coming out.
And that's all I was clarifying is, like, you're saying Okada would benefit from moving halfway to where he is towards Ospreay, but that's not a dig on what Ospreay's doing. Because with Ospreay, from an in-ring style standpoint, he's just – you don't have to watch him for very long to realize how spectacular he is and want to see more of him. Okada is presenting himself differently here, and he is more about the big epic matches, not, the sugar rush of jaw-dropping – athleticism like Ospreay has. Ospreay just leaps off the page, and I don't know that you want to change that with Ospreay other than style-wise. I would, dial back the big moves and the kickouts in rapid-fire fashion. I'm just more for, an economy of moves, more making the moves count even late in the match, and then saving the, one or two big kickouts, but not as many as sometimes we see. But that's a different topic. Chris, talk about the presentation of Ospreay so far and how you're liking it in the context of not super serving people who love Ospreay and just can't wait for him to come to their town because they already know him, but AEW trying to get people who aren't watching every week or necessarily buying pay-per-views or are straying a bit from the product to go, ooh, this has my attention. I want to be part of this journey.
I mean, back-to-back weeks, they put him in the 9 o'clock hour, which is – typically one of the highest wash spots in AEW Dynamite ratings, so they definitely want people to focus on him. He is surprising me. He was not someone, and I've watched him for probably the last 7 years or so, he's not someone who I ever thought would be a good promo. Even the New Japan rambling cursing promo was not as good as promos that, I thought that, people like Gabe Kidd and Jay White did that promo better. But he's really infectious as a babyface, and I think it's really important for his longevity not to be someone who's known to have great matches, because he can't have the matches that he's had in New Japan or even his first few weeks in AEW every week. He needs to build his character as someone the fans can get behind. My issues aren't really with him so much in the fact that I thought he's still part of the Callis family, and that really needs to be explained how he's just a lovable babyface now when he's still after beating wrestling Don Callis his stablemates, and they don't seem to care that he beat them and is neglecting them. And I didn't like the bringing up how he's better than Daniel Bryan because he won in Japan. My thought was, Bryan Danielson, because Daniel Bryan could mention how he was a former multi-time WWE champion, and that might be higher ranking than being a former IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. But I think he's doing a really good job in presenting himself as more than just someone who does matches. I assume he's getting a hefty salary, and they're obviously putting him in a prominent position for him to have longevity. He has to be able to cut promos and get the fans behind him. And so long in the first 2 weeks, or the last 2 weeks, he's done that. Okada can't do that the same way due to his command of English. It's not the same as Ospreay's. But I also don't know if he's being put in the best position to succeed in the presentation that he has now.
Yeah, very, very good. I'm nodding along to a lot of that. Greg, anything else you want to follow up on or bring up? I know we're kind of hitting a few topics rapid fire in terms of Okada and Ospreay and Mercedes.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, I did want to circle around to her before I go, and I'll try to be quick here so you can get to other callers. But I guess with her the second weekend, we've talked for several weeks now about her, and I am I'm a pretty big fan of hers, and I agree with going back to the conversation we had last week, I think it was, where I agree with last week's co-host that she's just comes off as I think she's way on a different level than any other woman on the AEW roster. And her presentation, regardless of what you think of other aspects of her work, whether it's her promo or whatever, like presentation, I mean, she just, she looks and comes off as a total superstar. And I mean, you would have to be satisfied, especially if you're like a fan of hers, with her presentation the first couple weeks, because I mean, really, you can see through promotional stuff, like they're really rolling the red carpet out for her. And I think even Tony Khan publicly said, she'd make a great face of the company. So it's very, so she's definitely, in that regard, the presentation's there. And, I also go back to the point about Serena Deeb. Like, I would like to see that match. I feel like they'd have a great match. I also didn't feel like they did enough to promote that if they were going in that direction, because what Serena Deeb did, two 1 minute promos on a show that half the audience watches is dynamite. And then with Willow Nightingale, I don't know if I can see her as a heel, but maybe if she has Stokely helping her out, maybe she'll be good in that role. But I'm also glad to see Willow get something, because I feel like she had some potential momentum after winning the title from Mercedes that you could have capitalized on, but instead they really did nothing with her. And I guess my final point will be that 2 weeks in, I think that you have to be optimistic as far as presentation, if nothing else. And there's more time to work on things. But also, as you say, Wade, we'll see where we're at. Let's see where we're at 2-3 months from now. But 2 weeks in, I got to say, if you're 1 week in, I got to say, and I do hope she stops talking about, taking the Revolution globally and stuff, because, number one, that's very divisive if, she starts taking credit for, the things that happened in WWE, and also it becomes forced after a bit. So I hope that's the last of that as she starts to do more stuff. But I guess 2 weeks in, I'm fairly satisfied, although there's things that could be surely improved upon. But yeah, I think the presentation's been pretty good, especially you have to be optimistic about how she's going to be presented as a star going forward, for sure.
Yeah, I have a grain of concern about the sustainability, because I agree that I've pushed for AEW to treat wrestlers like big stars. Rich Fan and I talked a few weeks back on the flagship about a month ago now about Okada, and how it's just if they bring Okada in, and this was before associated with the Bucks, you have to just treat him as the biggest deal ever. That part, you just have to, it's more tell people than even show people, although show them too in every way possible. And him getting out of a red sports car tonight is good. Having him dress really well, having him part of the Bucks bullying, the new Kevin Kelly to The Rock, I guess, and Alex Marvez, whatever. That's all part of it. But continue to hammer home what a big deal he is. I don't know if, you know, winning a secondary title is the way to do that, but you're trying to juggle Ospreay too. With Mercedes, they're doing that. Like, and she's doing that, but her you know, ring entrance and all that is there. But there are times where, you know, when the music isn't on and she pauses after a line, it, like, the CEO chant just sort of fades and she's just standing there kind of smiling. And it's almost like the moment is asking for more than what the fans are giving. And so I'm a little concerned that if that her character, and I wrote this in my report at pwtorch.com tonight during Dynamite, I'm a little worried that she might be off-putting to some fans if she just continues to seem, or if she ends up coming across as just totally wrapped up in herself. Like, there has to be more to root for with her beyond her self-interest in being rich and famous and powerful and pampered, which is what we saw in that video. So there's the idea of she's a really big star, but what is there about that stardom that we're supposed to cheer other than she started off with nothing and a dream and a hard worker, but now it's sort of like, is her character, it's gone to her head, or we're just happy for her success? And I think that's a line they have to be careful to be cognizant of as she continues to present herself. Chris, what do you think after 2 weeks of that aspect of her presentation?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's just too much. And in a way, this is kind of also combined with Ospreay said, too much. Now, I'm happy to be here, and I want to change the world, and I want to do all this stuff, and it's either going to break into Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston or something, and it's like, okay, this is a wrestling show. Let's have opponents that you're focused on and a reason. I think especially with the AEW fan base, I don't think she wants to come off as she's kind of the savior or she's bigger than everyone else, and I feel that some people they may think that way about her, even though I don't think that's her intention, mm-hmm. Which is why I would want her, which is why feuding her with Willow makes no sense, because Willow is like the most likable wrestler ever. And you're going to maybe mull the waters for some fans who don't want to go against Willow. And I think they should focus her more on a clear heel to give her something to focus on and make her unequivocally a babyface to the fans.
Yeah, the acting with Mercedes and Willow and Stokely, it, like, you know, Stokely looking at the camera in kind of a I don't know, slapstick comedy type way. I think some people are going to be amused by that, but the interaction, especially between Willow and Mercedes, at times felt like, where am I supposed to stand? Where do I need to be? What am I waiting for? As opposed to sort of a natural flow. Like when Willow's just like, I'm winding up and I'm going to hit her from behind, but I have to wait for her to realize I'm going to do it. I don't really understand her motivation for doing that, but even more so, I don't understand Mercedes seeming so crestfallen and betrayed that she caught Willow thinking about hitting her when, one, she didn't, and two, Mercedes earlier in the show said, I've got a beef with her and I've got an issue with her. And then if we unwind even more, why does she have an issue with her? It was like, I mean, Willow didn't do anything wrong. You know, it was an injury. It was a fluke injury, but they haven't really established even that. But injuries happen in a fight. So why is she resentful? It wasn't like a pre-match attack or a backstage attack. So what is her beef? So I think some of the execution, some of the acting, and really just sort of the foundation and therefore the reactions by Willow and Mercedes isn't resonating with me as authentic or relatable. There's ambition here to tell a story right out of the gate and, you know, have some layers to it, and that's fine, but sometimes simpler is better. And to me, I'd just rather have Willow and Mercedes be a fun team who get along and the fans get to get behind them. If they want to, you know, work out some difference over what happened, I guess they can, but it still makes Mercedes look kind of like not a sore loser, but not really understanding it's a tough business and sometimes there's injuries and Willow didn't do anything wrong. So that story just isn't there to build on for people who know, and it's not there to build on for people who don't because they haven't explained it. So why not just have, you know, Julia and Sky Blue just be heels and let Willow and Mercedes be a happy team getting along in feuding with them. Sometimes that this extra layer of will they or won't they get along, especially if you can't execute it really smoothly, I think can be counterproductive. Greg, I'll throw to you for your observation on that, because you've had a decent amount to say about her and Mercedes especially so far.
Oh, well, I'll just finish up and with final thought on that. I think you both make great points, and I think you're correct. I like the idea of her working with Willow, but as you said, I do agree with the bit more maybe of a definition of things and defining of things, and also I will go back to the previous point also that that fine line between presenting her like a star but not having her like big leaguing everybody is like this. With like this, I'm here to save your division because you couldn't make it there.
Right.
It's not, you know, it was nothing. I don't think that's her intention, obviously, but it was nothing. It kind of comes off as like, it was nothing before I got here. And she has this reputation, fair right. or not, as somewhat of a, you know, there's a reputation around her. And you want to be careful about potentially going too much into that, even accidentally or indirectly. So that's why I hope we've heard the last of like this whole start the global revolution thing. But it'll be interesting to see how that is handled in the weeks and months going forward. And then with that, I think I'm finished. Now,
Greg, I'll pause you. Oh, sure. Yeah, no, that's fine. I was going to say, like, I think what Mercedes wants to avoid is seeming like the high school quarterback from like 7 years ago who's coming back to the stadium and thinking everyone's still thinking about that great catch or that great throw. You know, about the revolution. I just think everybody sort of moved on from that. It's great you were part of it and maybe in passing mention it once, but it's about creating new stories and you're in a new environment. And I don't think it's like obviously the wrong thing to do or obviously backfiring, but I think we, like, as you're saying, maybe it's time to not seem like you're trying to live off of something that was years ago and then be the savior to try to redo it. I think you want to show people you're doing that more than telling people that, because it does border on arrogance, I guess, to say I'm here to save a weak division that needs somebody like me. And it can come across that way, whether that's the intention or not. And I think, Greg, that's sort of what you're getting at.
Yeah, and then when you take into consideration, even then that brings in questions about, like, you know, pay and stuff and personalities and all of that and so much more there. But, I totally agree with you, and I think, I don't think I have much else to say about it. But thank you, guys.
Cool. Great. Thanks. Good to hear from Greg. Our number is 347-215-8558. We are live during Rampage, the sort of third hour of AEW tonight. Well, not sort of. It is the third hour of Dynamite, of AEW following Dynamite tonight. And normally we just go live a few minutes after Dynamite, but we are doing our show simultaneously to Rampage tonight. So if you have tuned in along the way, feel free to give us a call, 347-215-8558 and push 1. Up next is Larry in Beardstown, Illinois, and then Keith is on deck from Virginia. Larry, welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
This one might be kind of short and to the point, I think. We have a new TNT champion. Who should his first defense be against?
Yeah, so at the top of the show, we talked about Copeland winning and how we're eager to see him wrestle a variety of other people. We threw a few names out, but we didn't come up with like an obvious. Well, let me ask you, do you, Larry, have somebody in mind and you're wondering if we think the same thing, or are you really just kind of wondering, like, no one comes to mind?
I'm more toward wondering. I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, matches he can have, but there's nothing in my mind that jumps out right now as, oh, yeah, that's the guy you've got to put in there against him. I don't know if you guys are in the same boat as I am on it.
Brody King is intriguing. He had a good showing in the tournament. Even Malachi Black or Buddy Matthews, like a feud with those three could work for me in terms of giving them something relevant to do outside of whatever they've got, whatever kind of side world they've been hovering in with the trios titles and tag matches and being spooky. So that's a heel that that intrigues me. Maybe Combat Club group, they should just be babyfaces, so I don't really like going there. To me, I'd be more into AEW original heel, but I don't know who jumps out right now who is ready for that, who would be worthy of it. As I'm kind of struggling here, Chris, does anyone come to mind to follow up on what we talked about earlier? I know you mentioned Powerhouse Hobbs from the Don Callis family.
Yeah, I said him. Now, he lost in the tag match, so
yeah,
it's a best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That didn't help.
No, it didn't help your cause. No. He's moved down your list.
I didn't say Keshta, yeah, who's probably going to lose to Swerve Strickland next week, so more people on the list.
Jay White isn't positioned at this moment for it, but, you know, that would be a fresh feud to have Jay White as a heel go after Copeland. And so, I mean, I hate to just harp on it, but as I talk about this, it's sort of like, it would be great if there was one or two men's singles titles, but when there's four, it's sort of like, oh, well, that guy's fighting for this title, or that guy holds another title. And you kind of run out of a deep list, which I think is part of the issue with even being able to bring back the rankings. It's like, which the rankings are for which belt. And if you hold a belt, are you in the rankings? If you're not, you're knocking out a lot of people who would otherwise be in the rankings. Larry, back to you. Any follow-up or thoughts on the names we dropped or anyone else come to mind?
Maybe Jay White right now. And it's not that it's not out of, you know, lack of quality opposition or matches that would be good. It's just like every so often, you know, you get someone, okay, he's got the title now. This would be a great match. This is the guy right here. But this is just a situation where I guess I should thank you guys for letting me know that I'm not the only one that is a little stumped on who should be his next opponent.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see what they have in mind, right? I mean, I assume there's a plan that goes – well, I shouldn't say assume. We're hoping there's a plan that goes beyond Kill Switch, Nick Wayne, and then Christian again.
How can they top Spike at this point?
God. Yeah. It feels so derivative and played out. Go ahead, Chris.
Someone that just,
seriously,
came to mind.
Go ahead, Chris. I'll mute Larry because I know there's a little delay here that's kind of confusing us. So I'll throw back to you, Larry, in a second. Go ahead, Chris.
Sorry about that. Yeah, the one person that came to mind that would have been an interesting challenge was Wardlow, but he just lost to Samoa Joe pretty decisively. So if they hadn't made up all that stuff about him fighting for the world title, he would have been a good contender for Copeland as a former TNT champion, but I guess he also is ruled out.
Yeah. All right, Larry, back to you now.
Hey, sorry for kind of talking over you there. I thought I was going to get a chance to say something, but that the joys of live radio.
no problem.
But it's as part of the fun of actually being a wrestling fan now is trying to, you know, in your mind, figure out who might be the next challenger for Christian, or if they go back to that well with Killswitch, Wayne, and Christian, how can they do that, or
with
what
Copeland?
Can they do to top what they've done?
With Copeland, you mean? Or Christian?
Yeah, I mean, what can they do with Killswitch? And I get Copeland and Christian mixed up. I meant, what can they do with Killswitch and Wayne and Christian?
Yeah, and it's part of the issue when there's so many belts and then, you know, not just singles, but tag and trios, and then, you know, there's ROH, and then sometimes other belts from other organizations get brought up, and there's FTW, which is sort of a fifth singles belt that does get defended that I, you know, sort of hedge to include, but it really should be because it adds to it. It segments everybody into islands, you know, and then there's something that's real in the locker room. You know, there's a cluster of people who just keep coming up with ways to keep working with their friends in their comfort zone, and so when there's so many titles, it sort of exacerbates that issue, and it prevents there from being, or discourages there from being, sort of forcing people who aren't to go outside their comfort zone and fight somebody they're not just friends with and trust already, and that keeps us. And we saw it even with Cody early on. You know, it's like Cody had kind of the Codyverse. It's been a thing in AEW and the Elite and on that is pretty persistent. I don't know what percentage of top title matches and top feuds have been people who just get along backstage and hang out or have a history, but I think it's higher than ideal. Chris, does that ring true to you, that framing of things?
Yeah, I think so. I think But I think also part of it is AEW doesn't think ahead about who the next challenger is. They're just so focused on this match. And then the match happens, and then they don't know where to go next. I think actually two names just popped in my head, though I don't know if – I think they're in the tag team tournament, though I'm not sure, which is Big Bill or Ricky Starks.
Yeah, yes. They cross my mind, and then it just kind of comes down to what is their – what's their status right now. Big Bill comes across as somebody who has shown me enough that – I mean, his name is such a hindrance because it's so unimaginative. I just think of Mr. JL when I think about how little thought went into that. I wish I'd like to see him in the background doing something that would justify and get people interested in that instead of just being in the tag division and then kind of disappearing. And then that's where it comes down to, you know, what kind of storyboards are there? What kind of, flow charts are there of, okay, in 4 months, we want this person to be in a fresh matchup against this top tier person to get people. And this is men's and women's division, tag division too. So what are we going to do for the next 3-4 months to lay the groundwork for it? So when it happens, it feels natural and not out of nowhere. And we don't just need an open challenge or some random backstage attack or some, coincidence to lead to an instant match. Or a battle royal being won. You know, like there's a more long-term planning, sophisticated way to go about that. Larry, back to you. Anything else?
Well, I think you've pretty well helped me, you know, with the answers to those questions. And again, thank you for letting me know. I'm not the only person that's a little stumped as to where they can go now with Copeland as a champion. And, as always, thanks for taking my call, and so long from the land of Lincoln.
Great. Thanks, Larry. All right, we'll go to Keith in Virginia next. Keith, welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. You guys have pretty much covered most of it, but I just wanted to sort of give my perspective on the Mercedes Moné thing. I saw a lot of flashing red lights during her segment. They still had that the CEO thing, and at this point it sort of comes across like they're begging people to say it. It's like she's the CEO now, say CEO just like this with the letters and the piped in chant. It's a little weird. And then she's kind of out there with the microphone, kind of on her own, and it's like, okay, are we going to kind of get to it? And I know this is just her second appearance, but it's like, you know, when will we start getting some of the meat of it? I don't think it's a good look for somebody like her to try to quote unquote work with everybody. I think as soon as she started mixing it up with some of these wrestlers in the May card, it didn't look real good. Like you said, some of the acting was kind of suspect, and it just kind of seemed like regular AEW women's division at that point. And that's not necessarily a good thing. It feels like they should have had a strong champion at the top, maybe a heel champion, whoever, and let her go directly to the top. Don't put her in the middle or any of that stuff. Just go straight for the top and then set people up and send them at her instead of having her mix it up with a division that's just kind of meh. And I think the cracks started to show when, you know, her and Willow, which I don't even know why, like, she's fighting Willow, but I guess you guys got into all that because she accidentally hurt herself. But I feel like the diminishing returns are going to start showing up pretty shortly here. And that's another thing. There's just a lack of philosophy with regard to...
All right, Keith just dropped, so I'm kind of thinking Keith will drop or call back. Probably his cell phone connection just dropped. Chris, I just want to be sure you're still with me and it's not on my side.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, so go ahead and respond to what Keith was saying there, because we're kind of picking up on a theme of some like-minded concerns early on here. But, you know, I think it's early to just go, okay, this is doomed, or they don't have a third thing in mind, a third week. Something for the third week in mind that'll kind of alleviate some of these concerns, because you know they don't have to rush into everything. But he's kind of sounds like he was nodding along and now reiterating and adding to some of the things that we're saying about her. So, what are your thoughts?
No, I was thinking as he was talking that Deanna Purrazzo got maybe the presentation that people thought that Mercedes would get. She came in, immediately challenged Toni Storm for the AEW Women's Championship. So she came in, interrupted one Mariah May promo, and was already put in that spot. And, you know, I don't know, again, if that's the best use of her, because she did a really good job as a heel in Impact, now known as TNA again. And they've miscast her as a babyface, though she may be turning after what happened today. But I think really with Mercedes, they need to give her direction. I think too much of their presentation is she's here at AEW. Isn't it great that she's here? Okay, that might work for a week or two, but now we need more than just she's here. We know she's here, but what is she doing? They need to establish what she's doing. She was not to give it away, she was not involved in the women's tag match on Rampage. I thought she would be. She was not, so I don't know what that would lead there. But I think they just need to give her a very clear opponent to focus on so she can kind of sink her teeth into and really worry about them, a clear heel, and then you can go to a lot of places from there.
Yes. So Keith did jump back. I was able to give us a call back, so he probably caught the end of what you were saying, Chris. Keith, go ahead and respond to what Chris said or continue on with the point you were making before the call dropped.
Yeah, sorry about that. You guys basically, you know, nailed it, and I'm a little worried about what's going to happen with her character after this. And what I was getting into was basically the lack of a general overall philosophy as, with regards to how to run a company. It's just sort of, it's still pieces. And, you know, each of the pieces are either, you know, good or bad or in between. And it doesn't seem to be like, WWE, I have my problems with them. I think they come off a little too antiseptic. But there is a vision that they are executing. And you can tell from the top down that there is a guiding philosophy for how to run a show, where AEW is just a bunch of stuff put together. And I can't fully invest because, you know, the pieces are so scattershot. And what do you think it would take to change that, and do you think it will change?
Chris, what do you think?
I think AEW has improved their presentation. I think I like the presentation of the show a lot better than the last few times I've seen it. It seems very coherent with some of the things, even having, you know, the people coming to the ring for the main event and main matches and highlighting them later in the show. I think the issue is, this is going to sound weird for me to say, but like too many people, I think, involved in creating AEW never think about a reason why someone ever stopped watching wrestling. They just think wrestling is great and people will watch it no matter what if you just sign enough people, and don't remember the emotion that people had as kids watching wrestling and getting into characters. I know we haven't talked about this, but one of the things that drove me mad on the show was Swerve Strickland, who spent all this time talking about Joe, deciding to wrestle Takeshita next week on Dynamite, which will be a great match, but why someone who is so focused on the world title will be derailed just because Don Callis said Takeshita is undefeated against non-Callis family members. And it's too much of a focus on, like, this match is great. You can't see this match anywhere else, as opposed to character development. You know, we've talked about Mercedes being lost or having issues, and part of it is because they should have spent – they knew she was coming. They should have spent weeks building up someone for her to wrestle. It took us half an hour to mention who Adam Copeland would wrestle next as the new TNT champion because AEW hasn't spent 4 or 5 weeks having a heel get win after win after win that immediately jumps to our mind. I think they don't really string together long-term booking and getting people in place. They just try to see what matches am I going to do well on the show that maybe get a buzz or get people excited, but not really go back to like the core of why people started watching wrestling, which is interest in the result, interest in certain characters. And I think they need to really establish that more overall. They do that for some people here or there. They're doing that with Ospreay, for example. But I think they need to think ahead of like, okay, this person is a champion now, but who are going to be their next 2-3 opponents? Or we sign this person, who's going to be the person that they feud with so that they get over and are presented in the best light?
I think the explanation, although I don't think it was quite as crisp and clear as ideal with Callis, was you already lost to Joe. How about you get a big win in against – try to get a big win in against one of my guys before you start thinking you get to face Joe? I think that's what they were going for there. So because Joe had already said, you know, already beat you, but it seemed like he was willing to face him again when Callis interrupted. So – again, I think maybe there was just – it was a little too – not layered or maybe just a little more complex than it needed to be. It could have been a little more straightforward because it did make it seem like why is Swerve getting so willing to give up Joe seeming to be willing to fight him again to get derailed, even though Callis had a good point, which is why don't you earn a match against Joe? I would have rather Joe just go, hey, that Callis is a good idea. You know, you do that first and then bring me the winner. I want to take on, you know, the better of you too. Something along those lines. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there was a sentence or two that was missing. And I think that's kind of the problem. I think that AEW, like their thought process is, isn't it great if Swerve wrestles Takeshita on Dynamite? A lot of people watch that match. How are we going to get there? We'll kind of finagle this way about Don Callis will come out, but you know, Swerve cut a promo on Joe before the match, had a challenge against the Butcher, beat him pretty decisively, and spent all these weeks focused on the world title. And so you need to make it very clear why he would want to wrestle Takeshita in between wrestling Joe. I just feel like there's a sentence or maybe a paragraph missing to make that as clear as it could be.
Yeah, yeah, and that's just on everyone involved in that, but especially especially because really all three kind of could have contributed in that way. Keith, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up or any other topic?
Just one more thing and I'll go. I think to that point, the Continental Classic, I think, was a good example of something to frame the show around. And it seemed so much more organized and, focused when that was going on. You know, it wasn't perfect, but it seemed like it took away this, you know, frenetic need to have something, you know, for this quarter, that quarter, hour. And Tony gets a lot of flack for tournaments, but I kind of wish he would just lean more into it. Just have a gigantic tournament and then figure out everything in between, you know. But that was all I had, and thanks for taking my call.
Great. Thanks. Chris, what do you think of what Keith said about wanting to see more tournaments and AEW's tendencies and some of the different ways they go about things?
I think having more tournaments would water down each tournament. It would be a little bit too much. I think they need to have the mentality when they book tournaments in the regular booking of the show.
Yep. Yeah, go ahead.
The Continental Classic, everyone had a purpose. That was very clear. And even some people who lost, you know, that, I mean, they didn't follow up on all the things, just folks like Jay Lethal, to a lesser extent, Daniel Garcia, but there was a reason why they were in the matches, what they were trying to do. And that's the type of focus we need to have for everyone, for all the shows, as opposed to we're just presenting matches because you all have matches and you'll watch all the matches that we have.
Flipping from the idea of everything being a title match or everything being a dream match, whether it's a fan's dream match or a wrestler's personal dream match, and instead going into the star-making business or wins and losses determine who moves up or down the card business more. So like Big Bill, for example, as a heel, could take on, out of nowhere, a babyface who fans would see as likely to beat him as lose to him, and put it on Collision or Rampage or Dynamite. If it's on Collision or Rampage, also replay it on Dynamite in some way or mention it in some way, but ideally on Dynamite, and just be like, all right, you know, we hear it a lot, lip service paid on WWE and AEW TV, more WWE probably, which is, oh, a win here would put them in consideration for a title shot. But if Bill, Big Bill, for instance, isn't with Ricky, he's a singles guy, and this is just for the sake of example, it doesn't have to be this. He goes out and he has a competitive 7-minute match with another babyface on the roster, and or a Penta, or I don't know, I'm just randomly trying to come up with like a name that might, Danny Garcia, Mark Briscoe, Kyle O'Reilly. And he wins, and then suddenly it's like, all right, good win for him. And you're telling a story. What are his aspirations? What does this do in terms of a setback for whoever he beats? Then a week or two later, he gets another win, and the story is, hey, he's building momentum. I wonder what, he's got to be getting the eye of the championship committee or whatever phrase they're going to use. And then by the time he issues the challenge, it's not out of nowhere. And that also adds something to AEW that's been a criticism, which is too many matches have been where you know who's going to win, but it takes forever to get there. And I would rather have somebody beat somebody who's similar in a similar spot on the roster and then face someone higher up on the roster, and then the loser ends up facing someone lower on the roster. And finding a way to work that into the web of how Tony Khan books matches on TV, as opposed to thinking it's all about match quality or just a title match that got established because of somebody saying something during a promo on Rampage the previous Friday. To me, that would be an improvement to how AEW TV, the meaning of AEW TV, and then how we get to title challengers.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of it is, you know, having kind of people in the bullpen, if I use a baseball analogy.
Yeah.
You know, you need to build people up on the side. You don't have to make a big deal about it. This conversation reminded me, this is actually someone in then Impact, but when Steve Macklin challenged for the world title in Impact, I remember when he first mentioned it was like, in the back of my mind, I was like, oh yeah, he won all these, I remembered he won all these matches against, you know, Rich Swann and Chris Sabin and other top people in Impact that were baby faces. He's a heel, for those of you who don't watch. And so when he mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, it makes sense because I remember him winning all these matches. And you can build someone up slowly for a champion if you do that, if you actually are intentional. But the problem, I think, is with AEW, they have such a big roster. They have so many people. You know, they need to keep a lot of people happy. It's hard to tell, you know, only focus on, you know, 4 or 5 people. I don't think that's their mentality because there's so many people there that they don't want to get mad or they don't want to leave. So you have to have this kind of wide open view, and therefore you really can't focus on a few to have them built up to be the next challenger. Even someone like, you know, Swerve and Joe, if Swerve wins, you know, who is he going to wrestle? If Joe wins, who's he going to wrestle? You know, we talked about Copeland and Monet, but a lot of the champions are in the same position because they're just not enough people that are ready. And I think that AEW has to spend time building up individual people, but it means that, it means you can't put them in competitive matches. I mean, I think a big example of that, like the Ospreay-Kyle Fletcher match, was great on paper, but Kyle Fletcher has as many wins in AEW singles matches as I do. And Will Ospreay's first singles match going 20 minutes with a guy that has no singles wins does not make him look good. It makes him look like not as good because Fletcher kicks out of all of his finishing moves. And
yep, exactly.
Yeah, so they need to get out of that mentality, but I think that's hard for them to do.
It is. It definitely is. It goes against kind of the core culture and mindset of the booking approach. But, you know, if you're looking to grow, you want to look outside of your own booking approach and go, what can we keep and accentuate that's working, but how can we augment or add some layers and try some different things? You know, it's not instant gratification either. By the way, what was your reaction to the viewership last week, not really popping, in this week's First Thing Torch Newsletter cover story? I write about the minute by minutes and how the Mercedes Moné promo last week, while it did more than a million viewers, for a stretch of like 7 minutes while she was out there. 2 weeks earlier, when Hangman Page came out on crutches and interacted with Joe and Swerve, that also did more than a million viewers for, I think, a couple minutes longer. It's not unusual, in other words, for AEW to top up a million, 1.1 million viewers in the opening segment. And the hints and hype for Mercedes led to a number that if Tony Khan just looked at it, but he didn't know it was on the show, he would not go, oh, we must have done something really special that brought in a big star. That's not what they delivered last week. I'm really curious by tomorrow afternoon what we learn about week two of Mercedes, because it'll wipe away the excuse that people just didn't know for sure or didn't know. It's been a whole week of publicity and buzz and word of mouth and obviously social media to hype her being there, and they advertised that she would speak again. So what are your thoughts on her impact? Was it more or less than you expected? And what do you expect for week two and week three when it comes to her? They're certainly framing her as a difference maker, but at some point, the AEW audience is going to know whether she is or not, and that's going to play into, I think, how the crowd embraces her presentation as this worldwide megastar, which is essentially the words they're using to introduce her at this point.
When I was informed of the ratings number, which was by a text message by a Rich fan, I responded to him that this was a disaster. I was not, because it was just wasn't any different than their normal number they've been doing. I think there are two things about AEW to me that are issues. One of them was they didn't advertise her, and I know they compared her to the CM Punk when he debuted in AEW, but there are two big differences. One, CM Punk wrestles under the same name in WWE, so you didn't need to specify, and two, you know, they didn't make it very clear that she would be there. They have ample TV time to do that. And also, I think, you know, they've talked about Will Ospreay and Okada being stars. They've been on the show. They were not, it wasn't a surprise that they were on there and it didn't go up with them. So I think the issue that AEW has, that they've always had since they've started, was as the show goes on, less people are watching. And, you know, I realize talking about wrestling now, especially here at the Torch, as a wrestling fan, I'm old. I'm old because I'm in my 40s, but I'm old because I remember watching wrestling in the 80s as a kid because my parents watched wrestling. And you would know this better than me, Wade, at covering for as long as you have, but I can't remember a wrestling company at any level in which their ratings frequently declined as the show went on. We are, as a society, taught that the most important thing in a wrestling show, boxing match, MMA, whatever, is the main event. And AEW has not, you know, there have been times where this has not been the case, but for the most part, they have not kept their audience. The longer the show is on, the less people are watching, whether they got 1 million people or 700,000 people. And I think that's a real huge problem, because they're not able to hold the viewers that they have. Forget about bigger viewers or greater viewers. And there's something they need to work on. I'm guessing the numbers are going to be roughly the same. I don't see anything here that was unique. You may have a bigger bigger bump potentially for Edge and Christian because it went longer than your typical main event. It may have not decreased the ratings in the last quarter like most shows do, but you know, I think it'll do in the 800,000 range. I think one of the things, too, to highlight again, your great work here at The Torch, but I know an article you wrote last week about the 7-day trends on Dynamite,
mm-hmm.
and it basically decreased about 100,000 over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of highlights when the ratings are not good on a Wednesday. There's a basketball game, there's Valentine's Day, it's an odd Wednesday, people don't watch TV, but if the interest is there, people will watch it on Saturday or Sunday. And the fact that less and less people watch it over that 7-day period is a problem. And I think that they need to really have characters that people wrap themselves into, not just matches. And again, they're trying with Ospreay and some other folks, but I don't really expect anything in the interim to really change their ratings.
I wonder if Tony Khan is expecting or has already expected, and Jason Paul and I talked about this, and Rich Van and I talked about this. You know, did they expect more? Does Tony expect more already from what the money he spent and who he signed? And I think, you know, he's not going to admit it publicly. I wouldn't either. But privately, you know, I'm curious if he's just like, what? And that gets to the idea, and I talked with Eric Kroll last week about it on the post show. You know, whatever the rating is in this first week, it's like, if it's great, that's fine. It can dissipate quickly. We saw that with Punk, although he raised the water level when he was around, but he just got hurt and there was all these interruptions. But with what you want are toys that are fun to play with long-term, not toys that are fun to unwrap, take out the package, play with for 10 minutes, and then go open another package. And so these, you know, the toy analogy is used when it comes to Tony Khan, I remember John Pierre-Mariniak, creative team member with WWE, talking about how Vince McMahon, you know, going way back 15 years, Sheamus was a shiny new toy for a while. And he introduced that phrase. You want to have a philosophy where you're looking to plug people into a philosophy and a presentation of this product where it's not just about that sugar rush or the instant gratification or something new and shiny. And so with Sasha, it's just like Mercedes, like what can she deliver week to week? And is she just out to be like, hey, look what a big deal I am? Or is she really into the storytelling and the matches and wants to get her hands dirty, so to speak, in playing long ball in terms of what she can do to contribute and making sure that this isn't just about, hey, I just want to be super over and get big crowd pops and cash my checks. And AEW has a bunch of wrestlers who are really into what they do and the craft of it. And then you just need the booking to support that and take advantage of it. And then I think the viewership increases over time more than looking for the next big signing, because I think Tony Khan's finding out two people who are big in Japan or Europe aren't going to give you an instant 10, 15, 20% boost in viewership short-term or long-term. You got to build it up. The former Sasha Banks isn't going to give you a big pop. And she didn't relative to what they did like 2 weeks earlier in the opening segment. So, you know, this, and we'll see, you know, we need a bigger sample size than just last week. So I, you know, we'll see what she does this week and maybe that changes the narrative, but yeah, I'm curious. All right.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. Yeah. This only because people know she's on the show. As you said, there is no surprise. If you heard about her, you know, she's on the show this week. The only one thing I did ask you to text and Rich this, it was very surprising to me that AEW did media in Boston after the, Dynamite last week, which made no sense to me. It reminded me of my friend Joe, who is a wrestling fan, but not a fan of maybe non-WWE, who, when CM Punk debuted in AEW, texted me and said, if I had known he would have been on the show, I would have watched. And I said, well, they didn't advertise to him, not on Twitter, but like he's the type of person that they need to reach out to if they're going to grow their fan base. And him saying that to me was eye-opening.
And I think people who are into it as much as a lot of our listeners are, and the people who are buying tickets to AEW, it's unfathomable that there's people who need a little hand-holding or need an introduction or need to be told overtly, not because of some clue on social media or something posted on social media, because they live their lives differently and they're not in that immersive bubble. And I've had conversations with people in AEW who are so, and I talk about this a lot, but they're so frustrated with Tony Khan because his world is Twitter X. It is social media and that kind of echo chamber of everybody here is passionate about something. So therefore there's this huge audience that's going to show up and react to it. And, you know, there's a whole audience out there to get, you know, I can't call it the second million anymore, because I think now they're just striving to get back to the first million. But, you know, for the first couple, 2-3 years of AEW, I talked about, you know, what do you do to get that second million? You've already got the first million, and Okada and Ospreay are just solidifying your first million. What they do going forward can grow, can help grow your audience. But in terms of that instant, whoa, I can't believe this, I got to go pay to see them, they're already being super served. Oh, Ospreay's just replacing Omega, you know, and Okada's just coming in and replacing whomever, you know, whoever was an exciting early signing for AEW. And you want to grow beyond that. But it takes work more than just something on social media. All right, let's go to an email here. JB in Detroit will lead us through some other topics. Number one, how do you expect the pace of the Storm May storyline to progress? It seems inevitable that at some point one or the other will turn on each other. I predict Tony Storm turns on Mariah May, making May the heel. But when do you think it'll happen? I have to imagine that Mercedes is competing for that title at Wembley, so I'm not sure if that affects the considerations. What do you think, Chris?
I don't think they should book for Wembley, their women's program. They did that last year. That didn't work so well with Saraya. But I feel that I like this aspect of Mariah May sort of dressing up like Toni Storm. I think it took a while to finally get there. But at some point, they need her to turn, probably sooner rather than later. I think they delayed the Jamie Hayter Britt Baker breakup a few years ago, which was actually a pretty hot angle. It waited too long, and then it never happened. I think this is something that, you know, I'm assuming that Thunder Rosa is going to be wrestling Toni Storm for the title next, and maybe that is a time to lead to the breakup, but I think they can't extend it too far. I think they need to get to it if they're going to get to it.
Do you think 6 months from now, where do you think Toni Storm will be 6 months from now in terms of her value within the women's division and her value overall to AEW? Like, are you optimistic she can become a really big, not totally homegrown star, but her character's homegrown? Or is it more of a phase and, you know, you want to use her to try to, you know, use her now while you can because her star will fade?
I think if she's going to maintain this gimmick, she needs to be like a upper mid-card baby.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just very hard to have her as the champion with this gimmick. I think a lot of it depends. I think there needs to be, you know, you could use the Mariah May as a way to turn her babyface and kind of have her be, because the crowd's behind her and cheer and finds her amusing. And I think that they can go with that. And I think, again, a lot of it depends on having heel opponents for her to wrestle. But I think that they should really focus on making her a babyface. But I also think she shouldn't be the champion.
All right, very good. Then number two from JB. Will the Hook-Jericho connection ultimately be a net positive or net negative for the career progression of Hook, both from a getting over perspective and from an in-ring improvement perspective? So, again, I wrote my report at pwtorch.com on Dynamite. I like this story if it doesn't lead to Jericho just turning on Hook in the next 3 weeks. I actually think they can use each other. Hook is green. He's raw. He's rough around the edges. He's still learning. And throwing him out there in singles matches has been something they just keep putting off and putting off. And then Jericho is now into his 50s and showing signs of age changing the way he has to wrestle. So you put them together as a team, and you can have Jericho pass along wisdom of psychology and pacing. They can tag in and out, play to each other's strengths, observe up close. You know, Jericho can observe up close things Hook is doing that are a little off. Like, even in this match, Hook at one point didn't know if he should tuck or not. You know, like, Hook needs reps. You know, you don't want to decide midair whether you should tuck or fall flat on your face. And it was kind of a late decision on his part. Now, maybe that's Jericho's age, and he didn't quite fling him high enough or communicate well. That aside, I think the dynamic here is intriguing. And right now the fans are against Jericho. You know, it was acknowledged on TV by the commentators. But I think if Jericho and Hook just form a team with, you know, Jericho more than twice Hook's age, but there's a dynamic there, and they just go after tag titles or get in a tag feud. I'm intrigued with that. I think it protects each of them, and I think it can help extend Jericho from in the sense that he's not put out there alone having to have long singles matches where fans start seeing him exposed as wear and tear and age. And then Hook can be out there not getting exposed also for being not as polished as he will be if he works alongside Jericho. So to me, keep a babyface, have him be a team for like 6 months, commit to that, and then go, we'll revisit when we want to break them up and how 6 months from now, but let's not rush into anything. Chris, that's my thoughts. How about you?
Yeah, AEW thought about this. They could have been a team in this, the tag team tournament. It would have been an actual use of them. Because they've teamed already, and I guess Jericho, they're teasing Jericho has a proposition for him. I don't know what it would be. Because, I mean, it would have been one thing if Jericho beat Hook and he said his proposition was that he would team with him and train him and get him better, but Hook already beat Jericho, so what does he need from Jericho if he's not interested, and will that lead to Jericho turning heel and attacking him and then feuding again? I don't know. I think I like your idea of them being a tag team, but they'd have to make sure that it would make sense after what they've done so far.
All right, then, number three, how will the Christian Copeland rivalry and friendship be viewed historically? It's obviously a unique circumstance when real-life best friends are also real-life professional rivals. Does tonight mark the end of the in-ring rivalry, or is there enough time for it to be revisited in some capacity? So I like the first part of his question better, like how it'll be viewed historically, big picture, because I don't want to even imagine that they end up feuding again. But that said, I think there's a chance, but again, this is down the road like a year or more, that they would find an occasion to team one more time if Christian turns babyface. But it's not believable for it to be anytime soon, given what they just did to each other and what they've been through and how awful Christian has been in the most wonderful ways possible for a wrestling fan to watch. But in terms of the rivalry historically, I mean, I think this is a relevant and important chapter in it because it's the first time they're both outside of WWE, you know, culminating in a feud in their hometown on national television in front of, you know, a big crowd and in on a major cable station. Chris, over to you.
Yes, I'm a big fan of the team. As I said earlier, I was a big fan of Christian for a long time, so I would love them on a personal note for them to have one more tag team match, but they have to be separate for probably at least a year to 18 months. There has to be a big character change, like maybe, you know, Christian in a year, the rest of the patriarchy turns on him and Copeland's the only one that saves him. Historically, I think, you know, as a duo, it's hard. I can't think of anyone that had lifelong friends at the age they were. I think the fact that they have pictures of them from being kids watching wrestling and training, and the fact that they've had lengthy careers in WWE, TNA, and now in AEW, wrestling in the main event in their 50s, I believe. I think it's pretty phenomenal, to be fair.
Very good. Number four, with tonight, will tonight be the first example in AEW's young history? Do you think it is more pragmatic to have a 3-hour Dynamite or a 2-hour Dynamite and a 1-hour Rampage at 10 Eastern on Friday nights? If I was made to choose between the two, I honestly believe that more attention would be given to the 3rd hour of Dynamite than is currently given to the 1-hour of Rampage on Friday night. So my vote would be a 3-hour block. I still can't believe I'm saying this after over a decade of the Raw saturation. I'm just against a 3-hour block of wrestling. I'm barely in favor of 3-hour pay-per-views, like every month or every 2 months. I just think people are busy and you're whittling down your potential audience to really hardcore fans who just can't get enough, and they're out there and it's great and they support wrestling and there's nothing wrong with that. But just realistically, there's a lot of people who look at when they decide what movie to watch, and once it gets past like 2 hours, 20 minutes, or maybe even past 2 hours, or maybe sometimes past an hour, 45 minutes, they're like, I'm out of here. I don't want that. I want a movie that's an hour and a half, hour 40. That's just how people's lives are. So you're then putting fans in a position with a 3-hour block every week to basically go, do I even want to watch any of it if it's so spread out that I'm going to miss the best parts unless I commit to 3 hours. So to me, this should be an exception. I think you just, My answer is cancel Rampage and Collision and make Dynamite the best damn show you can possibly make it every week. And yes, that might mean not needing the roster as deep as you have it, but maybe that then you strengthen Ring of Honor and give it a reason to exist. I don't know. But to me, AEW's growth is going to come from having full house crowds in major arenas with shows packed with one star and feud after another who are polished on the microphone, ideally both on the mic and in the ring with good star power, diverse personalities and styles, all within a booking vision and a structure that leads from one week to the next. And that's going to lead to more pay-per-view buys and more packed houses on Wednesdays. That's not going to happen because it's about how many hours can you offer a cable network to pay you for. So we're not going to get that. So if you give me the choice, I would still say Rampage on Fridays. And I don't really care how small the audience is. I don't think you mess with your flagship. And I think if you had a third hour under any circumstance, a third hour of Dynamite or a third hour that's deemed Rampage, which just feels arbitrary and weird if you did that every week, I think you're hurting your franchise, your flagship. So stick with 2 hours of Dynamite and keep Rampage on a different night. Chris, what do you think?
Definitely stick to 2 hours. As I said earlier, their shows decline as the show goes on. I can't imagine where it would go to the third hour. I think it needs to be noted with Rampage, and I think Rampage started in 2021. First Rampage had over 700,000 viewers. I think the problem with AEW is they don't book the show to be interesting enough for people to watch, and they've thrown some matches on Rampage that are not people who are put in prominent position, and it's starting that with Collision. So I think actually what AEW should do, they don't want to do this, but because it's too much like WWE probably, but they should have they're going to do two shows. They should do a brand split. They have too many wrestlers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this way they can focus on certain people on certain shows, and they have a billion titles anyway. So separate the titles and then bring people together on the pay-per-views, and you can play around with it at times like WWE does, or people can show up for a reason. But I think they need to find situations where they can focus on people, and right now they don't have that, and I don't think a third hour of Dynamite would help that. It would help if they actually booked Rampage in a way that made people interested to watch, and Collision for that matter.
Yes, I think if you're going to have two-hour shows, I think doing a really good brand split, a roster split, then people know what they're buying tickets for when they go to a show, and they have a reason to go to both more often. Cause like, I only see Moxie if I go Saturday, or I only see Takeshita, or whoever your favorite is, if I go Wednesday, like that kind of thing. So, number 5 out of 6 from JB here is, I don't know what it is about women's street fights, but AEW seems to always be able to knock it out of the park with that particular match. Britt Baker, Thunder Rosa was one of the more memorable Dynamite matches as a main event. And the Bunny street fight might've been the only moment I remember hers in AEW, and tonight with Willow Statlander versus Julia Hart in Sky Blue. Any general thoughts on that, Chris?
Yeah, I think the street fights are matches that are extreme. I think mentally, people have a different view of those matches when they involve women. I will say that this match, just saw part of it while we were talking, it had thumbtacks, it had people going through tables, it had everything, chairs, all the things you can imagine. And it was the culmination of a feud. But I think the problem with AEW is we've had this match, now what? What is coming after that? I think AEW's really struggled with what happens after a big match, and I think, you know, the four women in the match worked really hard, but they need to have a story now that the match is over.
All right, number 5, when we see the Don Callis family collectively get involved in a feud and or storyline that will elevate them from one current place where they've been to somewhat spinning their, or when will we see them, from the current place they've been spinning their wheels. Members of the family have had moments in a vacuum, but the collective haven't seemed to do much of anything of significance in recent months. Yeah, this gets down to like really deciding who you're going to focus on, and there's certain feuds and wrestlers you see every week on TV, and then I hear this, you know, anecdotally a lot, relatively speaking, which is you get into someone or you get into something, and then they're gone without explanation. Even Ricky Starks and Big Bill, we've been talking about them. Like, what happened to them? Miro and his wife, what happened to them? House of Black, what happened to them? Oh, well, on Collision and Rampage, two out of the last 3 weeks, you could have seen them. Sometimes that's the answer. That's not a great answer. And sometimes it's not the answer at all. People just go poof and disappear. That's where, when it gets down to, like, if you did a roster split, for instance, if we play that out, or you just cut down to one show, but you just decide, who am I going to push? A lot of territories in the 60s, 70s, and 80s made a lot of money with a small core of people who they put on TV all the time. It was a different time because they were building to largely monthly house shows, and TV were just squash matches, and they weren't trying to earn revenue and draw a big cable audience. So there's some major differences. If you have a roster too small, it can be incompatible when you compare it to the territory days. But what is compatible is who building around a smaller group of very top stars. And to me, the Don Callis family should be on TV 4 out of 5 weeks as a group with a mission statement, a match, doing something to enhance their character and the reaction that Tony Khan wants fans to have for them. And that's not happening. You know, like, is Don Callis your featured top manager? If so, put a lot of time into figuring out what he's going to say every week and move his storylines forward and put his wrestlers in situations where they're having matches. Pick up the pace of the booking a little bit. Maybe doing more pay-per-views will help in that regard. Chris, your thoughts on the Don Callis family and anything else that I brought up in the context of that?
I mean, they're very talented wrestlers. They get reactions when they do wrestle, but they haven't been pushed consistently. I mean, Powerhouse Hobbs beat Jericho a couple months back, and I don't think he's won a match since. Takeshita has kind of been a gatekeeper. He was brought in to have this match with Ospreay, and he lost, and he's probably going to lose to Swerve next week. Kyle Fletcher, as we mentioned before, hasn't had a win. And it makes the manager hollow. The words of Don Callis, hollow if he is talking about people who never win. If you think about any heel wrestling manager, they were always talking about how great their stable is. And they didn't win all the time, but they won enough that people believed that they could accomplish their goals. You know, Callis is talking about his wrestlers in this way, and then they lose the next match, so it doesn't matter. I think, you know, we talked about them needing heels to focus on. I know Kyle Fletcher is the Ring of Honor tag TV champion, which doesn't really mean much, but they really should have put them in positions to feud not with people who are about to win titles, but get them over. You know, but again, AEW didn't have them even advance in the tag team tournament, so it doesn't look like they're people they're getting behind right now.
Yep. With the Don Callis family, is there anybody, like, what do you think about the who's in the group and the dynamic there, and if there's anybody you subtract or add or feature differently?
I said this to Rich. As a Rich fan of everything is Rich and everything is Wade and Rich Fane, a famous good friend of mine. I said, you know, AEW would have been better off saving money instead of signing Okada is to push Takeshita like Okada, in the fact that he was already had a fan base. I mean, the thing about Takeshita is he's someone who came in wrestling for DDT and got over with the fan base without a push.
Yeah.
He first began in AEW. You know, he's also about, you know, 6 or 7 years younger than Okada and hasn't wrestled, you know, 12 G1s. And I think he could get that presentation that Okada had, but that would involve booking him in a certain way. I think that, you know, I was looking at a stable is you need someone, you need a tag team, and maybe when Mark Davis comes back, him and Kyle Fletcher reform Aussie Open, and you have Takeshita and Hobbs kind of singularly go for two titles or have feuds and maybe come together in a special circumstance. I actually would add, I'm not sure, they need to add another person, and again, maybe that's Mark Davis, but I think they also need to be presented as serious, as important, not just show up here. You know, they're all talented wrestlers. They all have had their moments in AEW, but they need constant attention that they are dangerous and they're people not to mess with, as opposed to just showing up 1 week just so that there's a reason for them to lose the next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. A larger story arc, and every week kind of meaning something, but there's a consistent build and ebb and flow and ramifications to what happened 1 or 2 weeks ago that determines kind of where things are this week and next week and the week after. And that sense of long story arcs being executed with a top core group of wrestlers, but not then abandoning it when that ends. Like that, and that happens sometimes. You're like, well, we had a big story arc with this person, right? And then they just disappeared from TV. And you get people invested, and then it's like, oh, they go away. There's times going away for a while is good. You know, there's no question. But you can't have it be the expected result of the end of a feud. And that's just happening too often in AEW, and I think it's been the case, as he's pointing on the email, with the Callis family. You get kind of excited about what they're doing and these promos, and then it's just like Tony Khan loses interest, or they have an international obligation, or somebody gets injured, but nobody mentions it, and you just pretend that didn't happen, or pretend you weren't invested. We want you paying attention to this. And that again, is happening a little too much.
I also have to mention, it never made sense to me why they would be cool with Ospreay having the type of matches he had with Takeshita and Fletcher, and not bringing it up and not caring. Like, just, you know, he beat two members of your team, and you're supposed to be on the same team. Why would Don Callis want them to wrestle? Why isn't he with Ospreay when Ospreay comes out now, if he's been in the family? Like, they need to explain layers of that and not just pretend that no one will remember that or it didn't matter. I mean, it happened, mm-hmm. you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Very good. Chris, is there anything else from tonight's show you want to bring up? Anything you saw in the background on Rampage that you might want to bring up also before we sign off here?
Yeah, I thought the Acclaimed, and right when you called to connect, I missed part of the Acclaimed cut a good promo in response to the video from the Bullet Club Goal, I guess they said now. That video has someone in the background, which I thought was Juice Robinson, and it was not anyone, so that was interesting. As I was surprised, Cal's family lost, and the match, the match is pretty well between the Julia Hart and Sky Blue against Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander. Mercedes was not involved, which I'm surprised about. I'm very interested to see with Okada where he goes. I don't think he's had the best presentation. I think the Young Bucks are using him or his popularity, and I don't know if it'll work out for him, but I really hope that he gets put in a better light in the future.
Very good. Chris, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, fun discussion. Thanks to our callers, emailers, and our listeners, of course. Check out the flagship with Jason Paul from ProWrestling.net yesterday on our Blue Logo show, Search Wade Keller. And you can listen to roughly 2 hours, an hour in AEW, an hour in WWE. We'll be by Friday night with our SmackDown Post Show 2. And go VIP, and you can check out everything going on, including the multiple times mentioned Rich fan. He and I recorded everything with Rich and Wade yesterday, and that is available for VIP members. We hit on an eclectic mix of topics, including some social media stuff that might not have landed on your radar that led to some interesting discussions. PWTorch.com/goVIP. We'll talk to you all next time. Thanks, everybody.